the last about 24 months by our company to support design simulation for lunar surface mobility trades, microlanders, etc. All of this is done for different NASA centers, different programs, so it's quite a bit of work. I'm just going to zip through it. If there's any further interest, you can actually run all these simulations off of our website. It's all developed with open source software. We're a 12-year-old company, or 11-year-old company, and we're in Santa Cruz, and we have 17 people, and we've been working with NASA for about 6 or 7 years. And we do all of our development on 3D platforms on open source basis. What I'm going to review today is a whole series of projects. I'll just whip through them and then try to run or at least a couple of the simulations live so you can sort of see how these things operate and what they're useful for or not useful for. One of the first projects we did was with Colorado School of Mines. I don't know if any of you recognize this. It was developed by, Tim Muff and his advisor, Bob King, working with the CSACS group. And it's done, I think, in 2003. It was funded by Lockheed Martin. It's a concept bucket wheel excavator, sort of a small piece of mining equipment for the moon. This is a concept vehicle. And we did an SBIR phase one to turn that into a simulation and to try to show it operating in a lunar outpost. And that kind of got cut our baby teeth on doing this kind of work. When ESAS was published, we did a full workup of CAD models, preparation for a lot of ESAS work, especially surrounding LSAM, which I'll show you later. We also work with a team here at Ames, which has a platform called BROMS, which does agent-based sort of human-in-the-loop work practice simulation. We did a number of projects with this lunar outpost concept, lunar outpost and work practices. The recent work, which is most extensive, started last November, is on ARLEP. Or ARLEP-2, which is the follow-on mission for surface mission. And as many of you may have seen the original slides that Mark Borkowski presented, I think about 8-9 months ago, sort of as a concept mission. And of course, the goals of ARLEP-2 are find the light and touch the ice, maybe a mission to the South Polar region. And probably most of you are familiar with this, and you've heard it discussed in the previous speakers. The idea here was we were invited to join this team to take rapidly develop prototypes, CAD models and concepts, and build drivable simulations that allow the team to experiment and then to present those simulations in the midterm review at headquarters, which we did. So, for instance, here's the TeamX exercise at JPL, and again, the focus was on Shackleton and traversing that slope and being able to drill. And if you haven't been to TeamX, it's a pretty amazing experience. It's very intense. It's sort of don't leave this room really for 4 or 5 days, and you have to put together an entire mission. And there's a lot of good resources and good people. What Team X would come out with, they would sort of go to their grab bag of CAD parts and CATIA models and pull together a rough concept vehicle. And that would be what would be presented normally. What we did was overnight we would take these models and a very low analog lunar terrain and put it together into a drivable simulation. This is actually MSL, but this was one of the vehicles that they put together in that Team X exercise. Let's skip through this. The mobility challenges, of course, of this is, so here's Dawes Crater, so maybe an analog to Shackleton. It's traversing these very steep crater walls. Red Whitaker came in and waved his hands and basically told us we didn't really know what we were talking about. And given his experience, he was probably right at that point. But we learned a lot from him. We looked at Lunokhod. Here's the traverse that Lunokhod 1 took. Here's a television camera view. And here's the operator, a joystick operation. A friend of mine actually met this guy. He's a general now over in the Russian Federation Army. So what we did was we took an opportunity to while we're at JPL, to kind of build a lunar hazard yard, kind of like the hazard, like the sandboxes that they have. And we asked people, what would you want in the ideal hazard yard? And we built a virtual one. So here's some features of this. Here's a negative field of negative traps of rocks. Here's a field of wheel traps at the top there. Actually, can someone turn the lights down a bit? I think it'll be a... Oh, that's better. Oh, that's even better. So you also have some slope, some ability to traverse some slopes with different hazards on them, different angles of incline. And then what we did was we took, just sort of to test out this yard, we took the MSL, the original proposal that was successful in this program was kind of a wire mesh wheel version of the lunar roving vehicle. It was proposed by Marshall. We took that and we kind of drove that around on the train, found it had sort of stability problems. There's the high centering hazards and the negative traps. And then we took Mars Science Lab in its current state at JPL and we modeled that and found, of course, it's very good at navigating negative hazards, but better here. And we took a DARPA skid steering vehicle, very, very simple simulation, and we just determined how it might possibly navigate environments. And JPL's athlete, which is sort of a six-legged spider using tweels. It's an interesting way to see this vehicle over there. But the main focus was taking the third option, RLAP 2 rover, and putting it into the terrain. And this is showing actually the kind of spiral traverse that Red Whitaker told us we would have to do on a steep descent. This shows the higher and lower, sort of raising and lowering the center of gravity of the vehicle with this articulated suspension to get over hazards, and lowering it here. And the concept, one of the concepts that came out was the idea of a deployable, retractable plow that could allow you to have braking stabilization on a steep slope, and at the same time to be able to excavate a very thin layer of regolith. So here we are in the dark, in the cold traps. Here's this idea of this plow is able to take a few centimeters of the surface off if you're in a low articulation. And then there's the drill assembly on the front, and showing it drilling. And we then took those stills, which were computer rendered. We made a full drivable simulation, which I'll run here in a moment. But here's the vehicle coming down the slopes, going over these high centering hazards, hitting some rocks, negative traps. I'll run those simulations at the end. We were then invited to work on the LSAM, some very, very early analog LSAM simulations with John Connolly at Johnson Space Center. So this is the LSAM model was published with ESAS, real simple, with thrusters and the main descent engine, with a very simple Apollo-like suspension coming down. So here it's encountering a rock. We also are invited to work with Ames on a number of very simple lander visualizations. This is a kind of a simple surveyor hoverer, which would come into the dark trap, cold trap, and maybe be able to do a drill. Maybe it's kind of more like a hopper because it could hover to the next location. This was done recently as a microsat lunar lander, just a concept that was done for presentation at headquarters. And this is the simulation. This is the CAD view in our platform, and this is the simulation running. Shortcomings, of course, of all this work are extremely limited simulation of the regolith. Basically, you can set coefficient of friction on the surface, you have the rocks, you have the physics running, but it really needs a lot of work. We have a two-year project to work on this. One of our advisory board members is Jack Schmidt, who's going to be actually driving some of the vehicles, assembly vehicles at home, and telling us from his gut experience of driving on the moon when you would slip sideways and when you wouldn't, and try to characterize and work with people in this community to characterize how the regolith would interact the machine soil boundary a little bit better. We would like to do thermal models because we can do ray casting in the 3D software, and we can actually project if you're at a sun angle, if you're on a crater wall, we could tell you the kind of sun exposure you're getting, and if someone built a plug-in for the thermal model, we could support that. That's something we're looking for partners to do with. A power system design, see how fast you're using up your power, you know, how long your mission life is going to be. It would be good to put that into the physics-based simulation. Plow and drill behavior, and we've been talking to Honeybee Robotics about. They actually have done some drill, good physics-based drill simulations. And some more future work that we're looking at maybe doing another outpost with an ISRU scenario. And the last but not least, which will be done in another 2 months, is the multi-user. So you can run these on your laptop, and anybody else who's in the simulation can take their joystick or in these game joysticks or keyboard and drive the vehicle for a period and record the drive for later reference. So it can be driven by people over the net. Interestingly enough, there's a lot of commercial. We started out just doing this for NASA, but there's a lot of work in the mining sector. This is a project for a mining concern in the U.S. To simulate physics-based vehicles in terrains for open-pit mine visualization. We've just started another project with a company in Canada called Falconbridge, which does a lot of really good work, and it's a mining company, but they wanted us to simulate this jumbo drill, which is a really important piece of mining equipment that goes into the tunnel and drills into the face to put charges and continue to build out the tunnel. And so we're doing that with this very expensive four jumbo drill Atlas Copco. It's sort of an interesting spin-off of that there is this interest in the mining sector. I think is probably a thousand times the budget of NASA. So there's a lot of research dollars spent in about four research centers all around the world. The architecture, as I was saying, it's open source. We chose that strategy on purpose because we felt that the government would adopt it more widely if it was open source. So we have people within the government that are doing development on them. And all the components are open source and cross-platform. It's been about a five-year development cycle so far. So you've got underlying databases for a whole bunch of different CAD models and terrain models. You've got an agent architecture. You've got haptic interfaces, auto stereo displays. Haptic joysticks are supported. It's really based on the fact that there's so much good open source components out there. You can put them together and make a really powerful platform. There's a whole bunch of the elements in the platform. All the source code's available and can be downloaded from our site. We found that there's a use for it in the design trade space and ultimately in the sandbox prototyping arena. If you have an instrumented vehicle, you could feed back to the 3D model to test your physics. So, you know, you would validate whether the physics is really representing what a sandbox behavior would be. That should be something interesting in the future. Down the road, of course, mission training and mission operations should be possible. You know, in MER, you see a lot of tools like RSVP and VIS that are used day-to-day on MER. Acknowledgements, these are some of the, here's Michael Sims is sitting right here, some of the people who contributed to this particular project in the past year, and the NASA centers and people have supported the work. And it's all available at digitalspace.com. All the sims, you just download them and run them. The full work product is there. Let's see if this is going to run. So this is one of the concepts. This was done very quickly, literally in 3 days, for a presentation at headquarters, I think, to Scott Horowitz and Mike Griffin. But this was just we put a camera on this vehicle, we took the CAD models, and we made it land. And it landed as such. But that was just an example of really quick work from just so they could actually show the vehicle doing something rather than just stills. This should be another one here. This is the LSAM work. We did a lot of different scenarios, but this is a rock encounter landing, which I believe happened in one of the Apollo landings. They actually, one of the footpads did hit a rock. So here it's coming down. You see a little bit of the dust production. It's a really low-level simulation, sort of hit the rock. And there's. Now, these are all run real-time. This is not a movie file. It runs real-time.
I'm sorry, what were you trying to show there?
Yeah, just to show how the suspension might behave, that you could kind of you could survive that kind of a landing. They had a 10 or 15 degree tilt. Okay. This is sort of a little sped up, but this is the RLF vehicle going over a way too steep crater wall and losing control, starting to skid. And this is the cameras tied to the vehicle here. And I'll run this. This is going over an obstacle slope. As you can see, we're actually trying to work on the lighting like it would be really inky black shadows. Oh, we would also like to build a really comprehensive lighting model, especially if you're going to do teleoperation type research. I think that one's, and also the dust. How does dust kick up? What we're doing here is just using standard game card dust puffs, which of course you're not going to have puffs on the moon. You're going to have these ballistic trajectories of dust being heaved up. And that's again another challenge we'd like to put into the platform is realistic particle simulations for that environment. What I think I'll do now is actually go ahead and show you the actual environment. So now we're running it just from the laptop here. This is a drive off of our little landing platform. Now what I've got here is I've got some settings. I'll take our camera off the vehicle and I'll take this extra power boost off. So we're running much more realistically. And we're just going to approach the crater wall here. Kick up a little bit of dust. Get into position. So there's different slopes here. We should be able to make it up here. It's so low analog that it's really just every time we get an intersection, take that off, we just sort of arbitrarily produce a puff. So it's hardly realistic at all. Okay, so we've put on a handbrake here, and so you can see that it is making a lot more contacts. And I'm just going to navigate over to some areas here, try to get out of this problem we've got. Again, we're not roboticists, and we know how to make physics-based 3D simulation work really well. But where we can really use help is from all of you continuing to build out the platform. I got myself stuck, which is good. I want to get myself stuck. Yeah, we're stuck. We're already right against that. That's interesting. Okay, so I'll raise my CG a little bit. I'll go over it. Okay, there we go. That's what the design was. Oh, we're now. Okay, let's go down the valley here. Yeah, in fact, let's do that now. Let's take lunar gravity. Let's take no gravity. Here we go. So now, there we go. Look, Ma, no gravity. Yeah, it's an easy way to kind of get out of trouble. But if I spin the transmission here, it'd start to flip the vehicle upside down. It's too fast for what a real mission would be, as anyone who's designed. I can actually change all these settings. I can change the motor settings all here. This is the complete access to the physics environment in here. So I can change my sideways slip and the restitution. Okay. Actually, I'll put my camera back on the vehicle. It's much more handy to kind of go into MER mass cam, pan cam mode. And now we're driving forward, we can really kind of operate a little bit easier. That's very easy. It's a really completely open architecture for that. So any physics forces, and it's all scriptable with Python. So you can really easily write extensions and put the simulations together. So here we come on some hazards here. Turn myself around. So it's, again, you know, feel free to download this and try it. High centering hazards here. What we'd like, and that was one of our earlier goals, is for someone to write a plugin that would do a real power model for this. That's in our next, you know, couple year plan. It would be very, very useful. But we're not experts in that area. But we can give you all of the torque that's being applied, whether things are slipping, forward velocity, you know, all those parameters can come back streaming in real time from the engine so that you could write your power model. So that's basically rocking back and forth here. So that's our work. There are a couple more things to show, but I think we should leave some time for questions. Sure. One of the things that we've done within the company, if you have a project that isn't going to take too long, that you'd really like something like this done, we just we call it the first taste is free. We do a lot of projects on spec for people. We did a couple for Carnegie Mellon last year that helped build a relationship that we're now we can now write grants. So if you'd like us, we have capacity. Always, I'll give you a card, and we're happy to do this kind of work. The modeling team is very fast. And I think, is there any more time? If there's any more questions? I wanted to show you something that we did because this is kind of it's a little bit of a blast from the past, but Raytheon, during the CE&R period, as mentioned earlier, contracted us to do a whole lunar architecture. Now, this is different than what ESAS came out with. This is the idea, and it's probably an idea that won't get implemented, at least by the U.S., is the idea that going back to the moon, what you don't want to do is do Apollo over again, because you'll do Apollo and you won't leave much infrastructure. What you actually have to do is do a vast amount of teleoperations for at least 10 years, experiment to get vehicles to work in the thermal environment, do ISRU experiments, do dust mitigation experiments, and then after this long period of time, which might be 10 to 15 years, you then build, tele-remotely build a base or an outpost, and then you send a crew to have a much more sustainable presence and whatnot. And I, from what I can see with ESAS and the VSC, this isn't what is going to be happening, but Raytheon, we worked with Raytheon to develop this concept of how would you do this kind of thing, and the concept came down to this idea of a barge that you would park a lot of teleoperated robotics that would do different phases. So this is the barge. This is very notional. Different, fairly light, not heavy lift vehicles would launch the components. The components would all be parked in this barge, and then you would have a kind of smart one, very, very slow boat to lunar orbit. And then deployment of the components. And this is actually from Larry Taylor. This is his famous sinterer. We kind of took his paper and we said, well, what would a sinterer look like? This is like a combination of a bulldozer and a mechanism to heat the lunar regolith and create a landing area, a smooth landing area that wouldn't constantly give you blast hazards every time you came down. This would be an outpost. This comes right out of Peter Eckert's Lunar Habitat book. The outpost would then land, and this nuclear-powered sinterer or bulldozer would bury it, because you've got to be able to give radiation, mitigation. And you'd drop some of the vehicles down and end up with a lunar outpost. This is back to the ISRU type things. And I'm actually a believer that we have to actually, we're going to be forced to do something like this. And perhaps it's harder to get public support and budget for this kind of long, hard, trial and error method of establishing a presence there. But I think if we do an Apollo Redux, we're going to just end up in 1972 all over again and not have a sustained program, because the excitement's going to be gone and there'll be no infrastructure. And there'll be, even worse, there'll be, one of the things I learned working on the Arleigh team was when we talked to some of the Apollo guys, like talking to Jack Schmidt, he was saying, well, you see, it's all about thermal, it's all about temperature. And I said, what do you mean? He says, well, look at the curve, in the 14-day lunar night day cycle. And we landed just in this, between about 50 Fahrenheit, was it, and about 65 Fahrenheit is when the Apollo missions touched down. And they basically had to get out of there after they get cooked or freeze-dried or whatever you look at it. So when I learned that, I said, well, of course, the suits didn't have big heaters on them and, very, very minimal infrastructure. And what occurred to me was, Apollo is actually kind of misleading, that the lunar environment is so much harsher, and that the fact that Apollo crews did not perish in their missions is somewhat of a miracle. So I think that we may be misled by the seeming ease of Apollo. And if we don't do this hard work on learning how to operate the regolith, the only way to do that is teleoperations. And breaking a lot of vehicles and having a lot of failures, I think we're never going to get sustainable infrastructure there. Anyway, are there any more questions?
Well, I'd like to thank all the speakers for coming up and talking to Bruce.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well,
presumably you could take an existing model, like a SolidWorks model,
yeah,
like a Rover,
absolutely.
And put it in your lunar.
Yep, that's okay. What we do all day. You're welcome.
Are you by chance going to go to the conference in Santa Cruz next month about asteroid and comet injury?
Oh, gosh, I didn't know about
it.
Let me have one of your cards. You're very welcome. Thank you.
It's hosted by a professor at Santa Cruz, Eric Asfog, who's an asteroid. It's called Spacecraft Reconnaissance with Asteroid and Comet Interior. And it's sort of like a workshop.
Interesting.
Maybe you could get in still.
Do you know who?
It's an LPI workshop.
Oh, it's an LPI. So I just go to the LPI site.
Yeah. And, but I think your presence would be welcome because it's going to be sort of like a short
time. Oh, great. Wow,
just trying to make plans to get it out.
Yeah,
to go to the interview.
I absolutely know. Which one's your card?
I haven't given it to you.
Oh, okay. I better write that down. You're going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I work for Honeybee Robotics.
Okay.
And,
yeah, I know. I know it's going to be.